and welcome to Season 3, Episode 12, the finale, season finale of the Grand Cast. Today is Friday. What's 9? September the 15th, 2017. My guest this evening, the man himself, Joe Anderson.
Hey, yeah, so this is the finale. This is where we jump the shark, right?
Season 3 finale? That's a good point to jump a shark.
Yeah. Well, a baby will be introduced or something.
Ooh, into the show. Plot twist for the season finale.
Yeah.
Someone's pregnant.
Hey, it's one of us.
Oh, boy. I like to start out each episode going over the mission statement and goals for the show. The mission statement being that the purpose of the Grand Cast is to explore the comedy scene in Grand Rapids, Michigan, as it exists in 2017 through a series of conversations. And then I have two goals for the show. First, to post one new episode weekly, which I've been failing at miserably for the past month. But I'll be back on track soon, Josh. Doing two episodes a week for the next 3 weeks.
Wow.
To get caught up. So publishing them. They're all recorded.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Just the production side of things has been slipping with the nice weather and busy schedules and whatnot.
Yeah, it's understandable. Yeah, you've got good excuses.
Yeah.
Nothing a little podcast shaming can't fix, apparently, right?
Yeah. Josh keeps me in line. Thank you, Josh. As frustrating as that must be for you.
Producer Josh, is that right? Is he a producer?
He is an executive producer.
EP. He's an EP. Josh is an EP on the show.
The booking manager. He's my vice president of operations.
Yeah. He contacted me about appearing here. I thought he was pretty professional. More professional than he'd ever been in person. he contacted me on Facebook, which I guess maybe that's not professional. Other than that, he's been pretty professional in terms of representing you. So I just want to let you know, as essentially his boss,
we're partners more than anything.
Yeah. I think of him as more of an underling, but you guys have your, you identify it the way you do, but to me, you're in control. And I just want you to know that my experience with little Josh has been pretty good.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joe. And thank you, Josh.
Yeah. He's intermittently professional is how I would describe him.
That's fitting for this show.
Yeah.
And the second goal that I have, which is recently revised, is to make at least two people's day better through the creation of quality content. It used to be only one person, but I upped the ante a bit.
Man, you doubled down and you're only in season 3?
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's only one season left. So, figure got to mix it up a little bit.
I'm glad we did the baby thing then, because that's when you do it.
Yeah.
Like going into the final season. Okay, good. Yeah, baby stuff.
Are there other good ways to jump sharks?
Killing people off.
Oh.
So that's...
only recurring character, though.
Well, so then that's... Yeah, it's going to be a bigger decision for you to make.
Season 4. You got to listen to find out who dies. A baby and a death. That seems circle of life.
Yeah.
Hakuna Matata?
Sure.
Is that why they do that at Dog Story?
I don't know. That wasn't part of my doing. There's a thing at Dog Story Theater where they say Hakuna Matata. I forget even when they say it, but I was being accused of the copyright infringement and using it. Just now by Christopher, and I just want everyone to know, I don't know who decided it should be said, but it wasn't me. I have no problem with it, but it wasn't me.
It's good not to step on Disney's toes,
because
those are powerful toes.
Yeah.
A lot of lawyers.
Yeah, a lot of lawyers. Okay, I guess I don't know, you didn't ask, but yeah, I'm on board with those goals. I don't feel like I'm in conflict with either of those goals.
Oh, good.
I guess I'm fine with moving forward.
Excellent. In that case, let us move forward to the interview portion of the show. I was maybe going to write something about finales and endings, but I'll save that for the finale.
Okay. That's fine. Yep. Again, I'm on board with that decision.
Great. I'm getting so much approval today. It's very...
Well, I keep thinking about that goal about making someone feel good. And so for me, if I can make you one of them...
I am one of them now. So yeah. We're halfway there. Great. So Joe, what is your favorite color?
Purple.
Is there... Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
sorry,
purple. Go. Just... Oh. Yeah.
Is there a particular shade of purple that you...
Pretty deep, rich purple, eggplant, your grapes, you know, like the Welch's grape, like that can. I know that's not as deep as an eggplant, but I do like purple. I don't know why, but I have for a long time.
Did you have any favorite colors before purple?
I don't think so. None that I would have like been on record saying. So like again, I'm not worried about being in conflict with any prior interviews. But I remember as a kid, like I had a purple bike, and some people, you know, some people had issues with my purple bike, but I didn't because I liked purple. But other people thought it was it wasn't a you know stereotypically manly enough color for a man of my manliness, I guess. But anyway, yeah, so purple.
Thank you. If you had to be transformed into an animal, which type of animal would you choose to be?
And then it has to happen though, right? So like it's gonna happen, so then I choose maybe a rabbit. I do like rabbits. They're just adorable. They're adorable if they're just sitting there, and then they're also, I think the reason why they stand out in their adorable quality is like if they're dirty and they're cleaning themselves, like their little paws, they like lick their paws, like it's one of the cutest things you'll ever see.
Are you a big Easter guy?
Oh, because of that? No, I know now it's starting to seem like it because purple's kind of an Easter color and I like rabbits. No. No.
Okay. What is your earliest memory of experiencing comedy?
Earliest memory experiencing comedy happening. Wow. I don't know. Let's see. I'm trying to think if there's a trigger that I can think of to me experiencing comedy. I don't know. I mean, my family was, you know, crazy enough, like most people's families. So I'm sure it was something stupid someone in my family did.
How did you first get involved in performing comedy?
I think in terms of it taking a real specifically comedy bent to it was I was in ninth grade and I went to East Lansing High School and our drama department was pretty cool and fun and very a little experimental even. And we wrote our spring musical and I wrote a monologue for it. And when I did it, it was blatantly comedic and it went over really well. And I just remember thinking, yep, I'm going to do that. And so the great thing is, you know, basically since ninth grade, I was pretty tunnel visioned in that direction.
And after high school, did you start performing publicly?
Yeah, I mean, I did I did stand up when I was still in high school at a comedy club in Lansing that is gone now. And I remember the first time I went, I literally saw someone come off stage crying.
Oh, no.
It had gone that poorly. And And it had truly gone badly. So, like, even as they walked past, it's not like you could say with any sincerity, like, oh, it wasn't that bad. Like, you know, you just had to just kind of, like, nod your head as, you know, as they went by crying. Yeah. But it still didn't it didn't dissuade me from doing it. So I think that was definitely my first, when I really started looking at opportunities to do it and some of the, I guess, potential career paths of doing it.
Let's talk about the Don't We Boys.
Sure. Should I give it a little context, a little rough context? Sure.
Please.
So a lot of my background is improv, and I kind of found out that improv existed when I was in high school. I literally remember saying to my drama teacher, and she was trying to figure out like how to help me figure out what I was going to do. And she was like, well, you know, you're very funny. And I said, yeah, thank you. I feel like a lot of times I'm funny, like in the moment though. And she's like, oh, like improv. And I my mind was blown. I was like, what's that? And that was the first I'd heard of, you know, Second City and all this other stuff. And so I definitely, improv was what I had been real focused on after stand up. And then, when I worked at Second City is when I really kind of fell in love with sketch comedy, which is what the Don't We Boys is. And I think the reason why I like sketch comedy so much is because, and it's the part of the reason why I like stand up, but it's because I love writing. I do love crafting things and polishing them and making them, you know, kind of bulletproof. And the thing I missed about stand-up was that element when I was doing improv. And so sketch comedy, I sometimes describe as stand-up with friends, because I still, you know, I still get to kind of, you know, work that writing muscle, but it's an ensemble. So the Don't We Boys was a group that started really, I mean, probably like a lot of groups, you know, kind of, you know, on a whim with a guy named Matt Sternberg and Dave Leisinga. At Dog Story Theater way back in the day. This is probably like year two or three for Dog Story. So at this point, that would be like 7 or 8 years ago. And we were doing Comedy Mondays. And Matt and Dave had done a sketch about, I don't remember which the first one was, but it was something they needed a third person for. And they asked me to do it. We did it. And at that point, I was already doing comedy and acting as my job. And so when it went really well, I immediately was like, hey, let's look into, could we do this? You know, I think that was really funny. And Matt and Dave had pretty, definitely very, you know, kind of more normal jobs. And I think the idea of taking that leap, it definitely was pretty foreign. And I think, to be honest, I mean, I think Matt at least would say that it was a scary, thing to consider doing. So anyway, we did a few shows locally and they went really well. And again, at this point I'd already done Second City and I'd already done a fair amount of things to the point where I was like, I knew we were doing really good work. And so I'm 6 months in, I was like, we should be submitting to festivals across the country and figure out, you know, just kind of make sure that we're doing, you know, like, where do we kind of rank in the country. And out of the gate, we got in a couple really big festivals, one in San Francisco and one in Austin, Texas, and the shows couldn't have gone better. And
those are sketch comedy festivals.
The San Francisco one is a little bit more broad as in terms of comedy, but the Austin one was I think it was Out of Bounds. They've got a few down in Austin. But yeah, so we got, you know, a bunch of early affirmation about what we were doing, and we had kind of a fun brand, I guess, in terms of the tone of sketch we were doing. And, so we did that a bunch. And then I was doing some comedy with an agency and told them that I was kind of looking to focus more on the Don't We Boys. And they said, well, we'll book you. We'll book the Don't We Boys. And so for about a year, we did quite a bit of college stuff with the Don't We Boys. And then at the end of the first year, Matt literally said at one point that he just wanted to be the really funny guy at work. I'll just never forget him saying that phrase, because that's fine. Like, that's also fine for someone to want to do that. I mean, Matt's so funny. But you know, if he doesn't want to do this weird lifestyle, that's totally fine. And then that kind of led to some things with Dave. And anyway, I'm trying to get to the point, kind of the current status of the Don't We Boys, which is that it was ending with Matt and Dave. But again, I think kind of from being at Second City, where, you know, I was the main stage understudy for like a year and a half. And so the idea of someone leaving didn't mean something was over to me. And I think Matt and Dave still were, they were kind of like, why are you still doing the group? We're not in it anymore. But anyway, we worked out things like legally, and I approached a guy named AJ Schrader from Greensboro, North Carolina, who I had met at a comedy festival. And he had seen one of our shows, and he basically said, you know, he really liked what he saw, and he's like, yeah, I've got some commitments for the next couple of months, but after that, I'll make the Don't We Boys my priority. And so since then, we've had a few other kind of third members that's kind of cycled through a few different people for various reasons. And currently the third member is a comic named Sonny Pandit from Kalamazoo. So that's the Don't We Boys.
So you worked at Second City, like, full time?
Yeah. So it was kind of. I mean, it was a timing thing. I always get yelled at for like downplaying the fact that I must have had a good audition as well. But so I had auditioned. I went back and forth. So I auditioned in Detroit, and I was terrible. It was a terrible audition, and I knew it as soon as I left. Like, it was bad. I was just too excited, I think. And then I heard about the auditions in Chicago, and I went to the Chicago auditions, and I was offered an understudy role in one of the touring companies, and I wasn't from Chicago. You know, I had barely knew at that point really what Second City was. And so I didn't know that I should have been excited about that. And so I was like, oh yeah, I'll think about it. And then I got a call from someone at the Chicago one saying, you know, they're doing this new set of auditions in Detroit, and, you know, we could, you know, whatever, put a good word for you, and you can go to the Detroit auditions, and you might be able to basically get a, you know, kind of a better job, essentially. So that happened, and I went back to Detroit, and ended up being cast in their touring company. And then I was the male main stage understudy, which was great because it meant basically if any of the guys were gone, I would go in for them, which was really fun because that meant I got to go in for lots of parts and play so many different characters, and so that was great.
Is the touring company mostly sketch, or is it also improv?
It was mostly sketch, and the touring companies do mostly what's considered best of material. So it's mostly like archival stuff. And there's usually like a little improv element, but it was mostly sketch. Yeah.
As a sketch artist, what's the ratio of writing to performing?
What do you mean that? Yeah, I guess I'm not sure exactly what do you mean.
I guess kind of time wise, like how much time do you put into writing and refining a sketch to performing it, and then also how many sketches get written for every one that is performed?
Sure. So I am fortunate, or whatever. And actually, AJ also. Which is, I think, is partly why we get along so well. We're both very fast writers, so we write a lot of material. And at this point, I feel like I've been doing it long enough that even if I finish you know, or maybe I'm even halfway through a sketch, you know, I already know, I already basically know if it works or not. And I'll just like stop working on it when I realize that it's not going to actually pan out to being something we should do in public. So, I mean, in terms of like, I definitely don't know, like, obviously not that you're expecting a mathematical ratio, of
precisely
it.
Precisely how many minutes.
Yeah. But I do think that, you know, like the great thing about like a really good sketch, and I don't tend to write very many, you know, time sensitive sketches. You know, I don't do much like parody stuff or anything. So of course the good thing about that is the shelf life is way longer. And, I mean, there are sketch things, like we have a show, a private college thing at the beginning of October. And there's at least one thing that I know we'll be doing that it's, I mean, I wrote it 10 years ago, but you know, it's super funny and they haven't seen it yet. So
yeah, it's evergreen content.
Evergreen content.
The term. I'm big on vocabulary. Still trying to learn, but
yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah.
For watching, do you prefer improv, stand-up, or sketch comedy?
Man, that's tough. I mean, I really like watching sketch comedy. I mean, for me to like really enjoy watching improv now, it usually needs to be people that have been doing it a long time. And that goes for stand up too, for sure. Like I basically, you know, like, I mean, whether it's an open jam thing for improv or an open mic thing for stand up, I mean, for the most part, I can't take it. but it's usually just, like a lot of my friends, even like a lot of my like TV movie, like film friends, and I know some of my comedy friends think that I'm like overly critical of things. But I'm, you know, it's not that I think that people should be like immediately good. Like I remember being terrible at lots of the elements involved. So it's not that at all. But one thing that I can't handle is like a lack of self-awareness of something being like contentless and not funny and not original or something. And then I think even a step down from that is when there's just like no preparation, or there's like just barely preparation. Because I always talk about like making a movie, but it's not really any different than doing stand up and sketch, since there's writing involved. But even the movie analogy works real well, but I think you'll know what I mean. So like making a bad feature film is hard. Like it's really hard to make a feature film in general, and even if it's terrible, but it's not that much harder to make it good. Mm. And I have that same problem then when I watch sketch comedy, that is, whether it's just because they didn't practice enough or they didn't edit it enough. It's just like, I get how hard it is to write and get a sketch ready, but it's not that much harder to make it great. Hmm. And so that's where I think a lot of my frustration comes in with, in terms of me consuming comedy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are you comfortable with silence?
Yeah. I mean, I think, probably, you know, more so than my audiences. I love it. Some of my favorite sketches that we do with the Don't We Boys are 15 and 20 minutes long. I mean, they're so long, and part of their length is due to some pretty significant silences that happen in it. But the good thing, you know, so much of the time when we're performing specifically those sketches, we're doing it at a comedy festival, and, you know, the audience is on board. You know, they're a little bit, you know, they're a little bit more on board in general with what's about to happen. And so pushing that is something they seem to be more okay with than, you know, what maybe like, you know, a Rockford, Michigan audience might tolerate.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm a fan.
What are some of your all-time favorite comedic movies?
I think Three Amigos is real funny. I like, there's some old stuff that I like. There are these Chevy Chase movies that he did with Goldie Hawn. One was called Foul Play, and it just, man, I just remember thinking that was so funny. I haven't watched it in a long time. Stir Crazy with Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor. So I'm going back a ways now with those. A lot of the, you know, and they're not blatantly comedic. I mean, the whole, you know, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz are big ones for me. Royal Tenenbaums is, you know, it's one of my favorite movies, like, no matter what. Like, it's what I call one of my, like top 10 forever movies. Like, there's no way it'll ever not be in my top 10. And it's awful and tragic and sad and so funny. And that combination is my favorite thing. I definitely skew subtle. I did Spinal Tap, Waiting for Guffman. I never got real on board with, you know, a bunch of like the Farley movies and even the Will Ferrell stuff for the most part. Not that I don't think those people are funny, and not that I don't think parts of those movies are often funny, but in general, I don't think Falling Down, like, that doesn't usually make me laugh. The first feature movie I ever made, when it got reviewed by the Detroit Free Press, and it was one of my favorite things anyone ever said, is the reviewer loved the movie, and he called it dangerously subtle. And I just thought, yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's dangerously subtle, because you either get it and you think it's funny, or you hate it and you want to know what's happening.
Huh. Who are some of your all-time favorite comedians?
All-time, stand-up wise, Chris Rock is way up there. Bill Burr is way up there, and Mike Birbiglia. I really liked a lot of what Dimitri Martin did for a while there. But I would say like Chris Rock, Birbiglia, and Bill Burr are high on my list. You see Brian Regan live, and you're like, oh, maybe he's my favorite comedian. I mean, I feel like anyone who sees Brian Regan live, they would have to like rethink who their favorite comedian is, because he's so funny. I think those are good. Sketch wise, there was a show called Human Giant that I really loved, that was like Aziz and Rob
Hubel
and what's the other guy's name? Nick. I think it was the
Kroll?
Gap. It's not Nick Kroll. The big gap in his teeth. He was on The League.
Oh, Paul Scheer.
Paul Scheer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the three of them had a show called Human Giant that I really loved. And it was really a lot in the tone of what the Don't We Boys did. And so I really liked that. Improv wise, I like a lot of the same, you know, in terms of classic people that lots of people like, you know, TJ and Dave, I've seen them a lot and it's always amazing. And I worked with, a lot of people that I, you know, really respect. Here locally too, of course, and definitely when I was at Second City.
Did you watch Dimitri Martin's new movie?
I don't think so, but actually that reminds me, I watched Kyle Mooney's new movie. So Good Neighbor actually was also a sketch group. I mean, they for the most part kind of like don't exist right now because... Kyle and whatever, I can't think of the guy's name, are on SNL right now, but Bennett, whatever his name is. Yeah. But two of them are on SNL. But if you haven't watched Good Neighbor, you should check Good Neighbor stuff.
It's a sketch group.
It's a sketch group called Good Neighbor. And Kyle Mooney, who does lots of my favorite stuff in Good Neighbor, he's kind of got the mop top of hair. You recognize him from SNL now, but he's got a movie out called Brigsby Bear, and it's just charming and fun and just kind of wonderful. Yeah. I forget why I brought him up. You asked me something.
Dimitri Martin's new movie.
Yeah, I did not see that. Oh, no, I know what you're talking about. No, no.
I forget the name.
It's like, yeah.
It's like a four-letter word, maybe.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen it yet, but
I'm gonna look it up.
All right. But yeah, that's what reminded me of comedy.
It's only sold as a DVD on Amazon.
Really?
Yeah. Like, that's... It's 2017. Where's the Blu-ray at?
It does seem like there would be... Or streaming.
There's no streaming either that I could find. Huh. I don't want to pirate it because I want to watch.
I appreciate you not wanting to pirate it. I made a movie called America's Most Haunted with some people in town, and at one point we were informed that we had 100,000 downloads on some pirating site, and it was like the number one movie on some pirating site, and like, okay, so we don't get any of that money, just so you know. Like, I had a friend literally told me, hey man, your movie's like doing so great on this torrent site. I'm like, no, that's terrible news to me. I don't want to know that.
That's good marketing for future projects. The film is called Dean with Gillian Jacobs and Kevin Kline.
Huh. No, yeah, I actually haven't. Oh, that doesn't ring any bells. So I'll have to look it up.
Written, directed, starring, and produced by Dimitri Martin.
I'll probably like it. I do like him.
If you can ever find it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are some of your all-time favorite television shows? Comedic or otherwise?
Yeah. So, I mean, comedic, I think the British version of The Office is the funniest TV show that was ever made.
Oh.
I mean, I can't. It's the funniest thing I ever saw.
Are you a Ricky Gervais fan in general?
I mean, I saw it when it was out on... Like, when it was, like, coming out in the UK. So, I mean, I became one. So, I can't kind of really fathom what it would be like, especially as an American, having seen the American Office.
Yeah.
And being exposed to Ricky Gervais as just, like, a talk show host. And then going back and watching this, like, weird production level, too, in terms of production quality, because it was so much older. What that must be watching it, but I can tell you, having watched it in the moment, and the fact that nothing like it had been done, it was the funniest thing. And most of the things, I mean, there are literally episodes from the American Office that are, they're just episodes from the British Office that they just like changed names and references to. So, anyway, so yeah, British version of the Office is way up there. Seinfeld's way up there. Arrested Development. There's a new show called Search Party that was on TBS recently. It's really funny. It's got the girl who played Maybe from Arrested Development as kind of the main character. But man, it's super funny. Master of None. You know, I do really like that. Drama shows. I'm trying to think if there's any drama shows that Law and Order. I mean, and if you want to, like, let's be honest, you'd be hard pressed on a morning where I'm having coffee that I'm not watching either Monk, Matlock, Columbo, Murder, She Wrote, or Golden Girls in the background. And I don't like. Yeah, I'm not locked into it. I'm not like emotionally invested. I'm not like a nut that thinks these are the best shows ever, but they're pretty fun. And Matlock's great.
Are you excited for another new season of Arrested Development next year? Or do you feel like they're kind of pushing it as far as quality?
I'm okay with it. I was okay with the little reboot thing they did. I mean, it was, you know, it was such a gigantic structure change. I mean, I think that was really their biggest problem. I mean, they were asking a lot of people to be okay with, you know, some cast things and story things, but also a completely different structure to the show. But I still really enjoyed it. Yeah.
what streaming shows are you currently watching? So like Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, HBO Go, YouTube?
Yeah, really the only one that I've watched recently was was Master of None and Stranger Things. It's one of those things. It's not that I watch a fair amount of stuff, but I definitely fall into that category of whatever artist. And AJ and I talk about this a lot. Like, if we go to a comedy festival and we see something really funny, it's not that we don't appreciate it, but the thing it mostly makes me want to do is go write comedy. Mm. It just makes me want to write things. So I create, I end up being kind of like pathologically creating content, and in a lot of different forms and for a lot of different people, and some of it for free and some of it for money. But I definitely often make myself stop myself from watching something because I know I should be writing that fill in the blank thing that I keep needing to work on. Because that's the thing, you know, like people, if anyone's complaining about anything, you know, if they're complaining about the state of movies or some TV show being bad or anything at all, but they're not making something, then it's, you know, then they don't really get to complain. And so whenever I think about, even as a career kind of thing, of like, if I'm, you know, frustrated about some movie or TV or comedy part of my career not moving as quickly, it's like, oh, well, then don't watch this TV show for 8 hours. Go write another movie or something, you know.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Animals on HBO?
I haven't seen it. I mean, I have heard of it.
I put off watching it for a while because the trailers they would show would be pretty like vulgar.
Yep, and pretty weird. Like,
yeah.
Yep.
But I started watching it recently, and it's, for me, it's incredible.
Okay.
I think it's like partially written, partially improvised.
Yeah.
And then they go back and do the animation side.
Huh.
And each episode focuses on a different group of different type of animals.
Yeah.
And part of it's like the personality of that animal, like what people associate with that type of animal. And then also taking it out of the animal context where they're people talking and they're doing kind of human-like things.
Yeah.
And, there's a lot of really funny moments in that I've really enjoyed.
Cool. All right.
Far more than the preview made it appear to.
Yeah. I'll have to check it. Oh, yeah. Also, just because I feel like no one knows about it, there's a show called The Missing on Stars, and it's awesome. It's a kind of a creepy, not really like True Detective, but just a really good drama series, anthology series.
What is comedy to you?
It's a lot of things. I mean, it's, you know, like, something definitely a lot of my friends have heard me say to people is, you know, like, you know, someone will say, oh, it's so great, you're doing comedy as your job. And my response is usually, I'm just stressed about everything you're not stressed about. And it's true. I just, you know, like days of the week don't mean anything. Of course, most of my friends have normal jobs, and I'll ask them to do something, you know, on a Wednesday at 2 o'clock, and they'll be like, no, I'm at work. And I'm like, oh, right. And they'll be like, yeah, can you do something on the weekend? But similarly, like to me asking them about 2 o'clock on a Wednesday, them asking me about the weekend, like, I don't know. The weekend's just like another day when I'm trying to find someone to pay me for something. So it's weird. It's a real interesting kind of decision and change when it becomes what you also want to be, like your livelihood, not just your life. And this is again something AJ and I talk a lot about, because like AJ has a lot of friends in North Carolina that do comedy and that are really funny, and I have, you know, a bunch here. But the main thing that drew he and I together was the fact that we both like it was going to be what we did for our jobs. And that's just a different, it's a different mindset. And I do sometimes think about, even almost as an experiment, like getting a job at Panera Bread for a year and still do comedy, but have a full-time job at Panera Bread and just kind of enjoy whatever that would feel like, knowing my schedule and how much that I would have enough money for things, and knowing that any of my free time was literally my free time. Whereas now you just, every bit of free time just feels like I need to make the most important decision I've ever made. Just constantly, you're making super important decisions. So I also love it, of course. I mean, you know, if I didn't love it, I wouldn't be doing it. I remember saying at some like high school workshop once, and someone was asking about doing comedy, and I just said, yeah, if there's anything else you can do and be happy, do that. But if there's not, yeah, do this. But know that there's nothing at all wrong with, you know, being an accountant and having a family and having a good job and doing comedy sometimes. Like, that's also a fine option. But because this is, yeah, this is a crazy, weird, gypsy, hypothetical life that I live.
The road less traveled.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I don't know. It's hard. It's exhausting. And then, you know, I think too, like, you know, and someone in town, actually a pretty good friend at one point, I heard this from someone that they had said, you know, Joe's so funny, you know, like, why hasn't he made it? And it didn't like bother me in the way some people would think it might. It was just like, oh, wait, I mean, I'm, you know, for like 10 years now, I've been making my living acting and doing comedy. So there aren't many people that can say that. So like, for me, like, that's fine. Like, I have no,
you have made it.
Yeah. Like, I have no need at all to be famous at all, but do I get to do comedy and write comedy? And that's what I'm doing most of the time. Great. That's all. Like, that's all I was actually going for.
What is your favorite Adam Sandler movie?
If Punch Drunk Love.
Hands down?
Yeah, because I don't know if I probably literally didn't see the other ones in their entirety. Oh. Yeah, I don't know. It's not like I don't think he's funny. I just, like, just for the most part, that kind of genre of movie, I just would never actually choose.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's fair. Let's talk about professional acting.
All right.
There's been a lot of confusion over this prompt, and I'm probably going to have to change it for next season.
Okay.
But basically what I'm asking you is, please talk about. I just like the way that "let's talk about" sounds better.
So, professional acting and, I mean, comedy in West Michigan have, you know, kind of similar struggles. So, it is definitely a situation where, especially as long as I've been doing it now, it's definitely become a situation where, you know, I'm a bigger fish in a smaller pond. So I get a lot of work now that just because people know me and know that I'll be good in whatever the thing is they're making. And so I'll just get calls and say, yeah, are you free? Can you be in this thing? But that took a lot of cultivating, of course. I like acting, like doing like straight act, not comedic acting. I mean, I tend to get, in movie stuff, I tend to get cast in more dramatic roles. I mean, the two bigger ones that, Joel Patrykis, who's a local filmmaker, and he's had, you know, pretty incredible worldwide success with some of his movies. The two I was in, one of his called Buzzard, and then one that just shot this summer, and, you know, both of them are blatantly dramatic roles. But I do, anyway. Yeah, I enjoy that, I think, for the same reason that I think people enjoyed seeing, you know, like Will Ferrell and Stranger Than Fiction and Robin Williams and One Hour Photo and Adam Sandler and Punch Drunk Love. But yeah, I don't know. It's there's not a ton of work in Grand Rapids in terms of paid acting work. Like Grand Rapids is overall like a town of incredibly talented hobbyists. And for some reason that people think that I mean that negative, like that's not, there's not a negative connotation to that. Like, so maybe it's the hobby is the problem word. I don't know what, I mean, maybe I should just call it part timers or something, but there's like incredibly talented musicians, actors, comedians, whatever in this town, but they also have normal jobs and it's kind of out of necessity if you're going to live in Grand Rapids. So I get that. So, you know, I end up traveling a lot for both acting and comedy stuff.
What's your favorite city to travel to?
You know, I mean, I like the cities that lots of people like Austin, super fun, Roanoke, Virginia. I like beautiful stuff. So, Vermont is like kind of shockingly beautiful. Like if you tried to drive through Vermont in like September or early October, wherever you're trying to go will take forever because you are constantly just stopping your car to look at how crazy beautiful things are. Yeah, those are good ones. Asheville, again, I know lots of people like it, but Asheville, North Carolina is super fun and artsy and supportive. I mean, and Grand Rapids is. I mean, the change that Grand Rapids, I mean, in the last 5 years, I mean, the last 10 years, it's like night and day. In the last 5 years, though, even, it just, it's kind of skyrocket, you know, level change. And for the most part, all good in terms of, you know, for someone like myself trying to be an entrepreneur and being a comedian and being a creative type. So yeah, so Grand Rapids is up there as well.
It's a very nice place to live.
It is.
Let's talk about writing.
Writing. Again, I mentioned earlier, I happened to, for whatever reason, I'm fairly prolific once I decide I'm going to write something. So most of the problem then is just making that time. And I definitely fall into that category of people who sometimes, and I mean, you may have even seen a post at some point on Facebook where I'll just be like, yeah, anyone have a cottage? And I'll wait for someone to respond. And I was like, yeah, can I go to your cottage for 3 days? And I'll just go and just hunker down and write a bunch of stuff. Because I need, you know, I need that focus like most people do. But it's weird how important it is to so many parts of comedy and how unknown that is, not only to the audience, but to so many people who are trying to do comedy. And I remember someone coming up to us at a college show and the person said that they wanted to do comedy. And I kind of already had a feeling of where it was going. And so I said, oh, you like writing? And I'm like kind of knowing what their answer was going to be. And they're like, no. And I was like, yeah, I don't think you want to do comedy. you know, if that stopped them from doing it, then that's probably good because it should take more than that to stop you from doing it. But it's just, it's that, it's writing. Like I sometimes say to one of my little phrases I know I've said to a lot of people is that, and I believe it is that I do think most people are funny, you know, like my mom's funny, like everyone's funny. And the main difference between just kind of everyone else and people who are trying to do comedy, especially for a living, is that when I hear or say something funny, I write it down and I say it again. And sometimes it's literally just some weird sentence that someone said and I just jot it down because I'm like, man, someone's got to say that in a scene someday.
Yeah. Let's talk about voice work.
I don't do very much voice work. I've been fortunate and had a couple, like from a financial standpoint, I had a couple big ones that were nice. But I don't do very much. I think I have, I definitely don't have a traditionally, you know, like radio or commercial friendly voice. But I like doing it. Yeah.
Do you ever get tired of performing? And if so, how do you deal with it?
I don't, so far I don't really. And like, even when people are like, oh, it's good to, you know, do you like that you're not traveling as much right now? And no, not really. I mean, I like being home, but I never really got tired of touring around. No, I don't get tired of performing. I guess the only element, which, you know, we can talk a little bit about, you know, trying to open up the Comedy Project place, but, is especially doing sketch and, you know, once you're involving like props and costumes and stuff, I do often, I mean, I miss, you know, where at Second City, it's just, you know, the audience comes to you and you just, all your stuff's there and the lights are all there and everything's all set. And then the audience just comes and you do that show that you do in that place. Whereas, you know, when we travel with the Don't We Boys specifically, I mean, it's a production. I mean, we travel with our own lights, our own sound, you know, mics, costume stuff. And so when we get to a college, you know, like it's a process to get everything set up. And I guess I get a little bit tired of that. But as soon as the stuff's up, I'm definitely excited about actually performing.
Does wisdom come with age?
I think it has to, in terms, just because experience has happened. And then, so unless you're an idiot and you don't, you know, you're not able to process what happened while you were experiencing things, like you should have some wisdom from them. I mean, at the very least, hindsight, I guess, I don't know if, I guess hindsight is a form of wisdom. But yeah, I mean, but there's no reason why you can't, I think, cultivate it a little bit too in yourself when you're younger. Like, just, again, kind of going back to the idea of being self-aware. And even sometimes at comedy festivals, we would see a group do something and I would just think, really? No one thought maybe we shouldn't do this in front of people yet? Really? So, yeah, anyway.
What does it mean to be a comedian?
I guess one of the big things, and I think this is true of, you know, definitely a lot of comedians, is I definitely enjoy, you know, being able to talk about the things that, you know, either that, you know, that make you mad or make you sad or that you think should be different, and figuring out ways to do that that aren't either wholly offensive, or have, you know, like an accessibility to them without like selling out the quality of the joke. You know, writing that line and pushing that envelope is definitely something I enjoy doing. I think that's probably one of the things most comedians enjoy most. I don't know if that's true. I think, yeah, I'll speak for all comedians when I say that that's what they all enjoy doing most. But I do think it's likely that is, I mean, you know, it's getting stuff off your chest. But again, that goes to that, like that preparation. Like some people, you know, they're like, they'll see Bill Burr. There's literally the amount of people who, when he was in town last, and they're like, I love how he's just like riffing. I'm like, you're out of, really? You really think he was riffing? I just saw the show before it. I promise you, he did the same show.
I guess you've seen behind the curtain, so you kind of, yeah, know how the sausage is made. And
yeah, and I still like sausage.
That's weird how that works. What is the best financial advice that you can give to younger people?
I would kind of go back to that thing I had said, which is, I mean, really, if there's anything else you can do and be happy, just do that. Like, I read this amazing article. I think it was on Splitsider, and it sounds like it's just jokey, but it's not. It was so heartfelt, and the main thing about the article was basically when it's okay to tell your artistic friends that it's okay to quit. And it was just this really beautiful article about how people who aren't doing a creative thing also feel pressure to keep affirming their creative friends because maybe part of it is because they're not doing it, but part of it is because they think that's what you need. What you need is to just be pushed, you know, to keep following your dream. But at some point, for a lot of people, I think that they would love having their friend just go, "Hey, I think you're great, but if you're tired, just get a job at Panera Bread if you also like bread, you know?"
Or broccoli cheddar soup.
Or broccoli cheddar soup. Two things that they're just killing it at Panera Bread.
How much is Panera Bread paying you?
Yeah, for all of these plugs. And it's actually, their HR department apparently, right? Because I'm not even plugging their food. I'm plugging the job being employed at Panera Bread. I guess in terms of financial advices, I mean, I've got a high threshold for poverty, and that's no joke. And I've had years where I've made a surprising amount of money, and then I've had most of the other years where it's like, oh, wow, it seems like I should make more money than this by now. It's deciding which things are more important to you, you know, and if you need to do comedy, you probably need to not have a bunch of other things.
And when one of those years happens where you make a surprising amount of money, what's the best way to handle something like that?
I mean, I'm pretty good. I definitely save my money. So, yeah, because I mean, the idea that, you know, like I've got a friend that I worked with at Second City who's incredibly famous and has, I mean, I can't imagine that he is hurting for any money now. And I know for a fact, though, that he is still like chasing work. Like he's just like saying yes to stuff because he's been doing it long enough that he also knows that I don't know if this is going to last. And at the level that it's at right now for him, it probably won't last. Like it will change from that. So he's still like, you know, like a chipmunk, like filling his cheeks, you know, with money. And so I guess, yeah, be prepared to do that. And then maybe also with food, if you want to actually survive.
I like the old saying, make hay while the sun shines, because opportunities don't last forever.
Yeah.
And I think utilizing your time when those opportunities exist is a really important part of being successful.
It is. And it's, and I mean, you know, when it's going well, it's often still not going so well that it's not exhausting. You know, like, I mean, I remember over different periods of time, I've had friends who are teachers and they're like, oh, I've got a friend, you know, I've got a student who kind of wants to be an actor or a comedian, you know, could they job shadow you? And I'm like, no, my days are crazy and so erratic in terms of chasing down some job or following up on something or that doing a job. And it's just, yeah, like it's so erratic.
What is the best relationship advice that you can give to younger comedians?
One thing that, and I've said this to a couple people, and man, I don't know. I literally do not know what made me kind of adopt this as early as I did, but I know it goes back at least to high school, but I came up with this little like mantra for myself, which was make people like you as fast as you can for as long as you can and mean it. And, you know, each part of that is really important, you know, because if you don't mean it, then, you know, then you're just a, you know, piece of shit and you're like sucking up to people or whatever. And so I guess that, I mean, you're like being authentic, but also like being self-aware enough to know that like, if you're being shitty to people, that's like, you know, like when something, you know, when someone's like, oh yeah, I mean, he's kind of an ass, but he owns it. And like, well, that he's still an ass then. So that's still what his personality is. And so if that's who, you know, if you can't tell that that's how you're coming off to people, but lots of other people can, I mean, like you need that, yeah, reconcile that somehow and fix it if you can fix it with integrity, like want to fix it because of all of the better things that will happen if you do.
Who are some of your role models?
Some of my role models. I mean, there's one kind of weird one, which would be this. He was my algebra teacher in high school. This guy named Jesse Turner. His name is Mr. Turner, but I knew his first name was Jesse, and I thought that was cool. But I think I think he was a role model just because he had no reason to be nice to me and like support what I was, like I was not good in his class behavior wise or, you know, algebra wise. But he was always so like kind of supportive of me as a person. And then my drama teacher as well was a big influence for sure. A woman named Kate Vile at East Lansing High School. And she was walking the walk and talking the talk and encouraging people to take risks, you know, with their lives in terms of, you know, creative choices. And I did, and she's glad.
Let's talk about the original Comedy Mondays.
Sure.
I'm not sure what the term is. That was before.
Yeah, it was just called Comedy Mondays. And then when No Outlet took it over, it became Comedy Outlet Mondays. And actually, going back before that, it was Old Lady Mondays, which is kind of the very first thing that happened. So Dog Story, when it was first starting in Monday, it was dark, you know, nothing was ever happening on Monday. And so a group of people started putting on this very funny, like, episodic comedic drag show thing called Old Lady Mondays. It was really funny. And then they stopped doing it. And not long after that, I launched Comedy Mondays. And we ran it for a long time. And we did, I think for the most part, we did shows at 8 and 9 and then an open jam at 10. And so most of the shows were like half hour shows at least. It was definitely what I needed to do. Like I just needed to be improvising more. There were some people in town who at first I was frustrated that they weren't coming to Comedy Mondays ever. Other people who I knew did improv in town and people who even that I was friends with, and they would never show up. And I was just, it bothered me for a while. And then I realized, I was like, oh, they don't need to do it as much. And not from like a, I don't mean in like a better than way, just like emotionally, creatively, they didn't need to do it as much. And I needed to do it more. And so, you know, these 2 to 3 hour chunks on Monday were just like what I needed to have happen. And You know, there was another little group, a little side group of like six of us who we would get together for just these 4 hour chunks in just a room, you know, with obviously no intention of an audience, and just be doing improv for 4 hours, because I needed to do it more.
Do you ever use improv as a basis for writing?
For sure. I mean, both in like script writing and sketch stuff. So whether, and like when it's script writing, I mean, like if it's like movie or like TV-ish stuff, or I do a lot of corporate script writing as well. I definitely will do a lot of, like I'll write something basically down, and then I'll kind of improvise my way through it, and then I'll write down, you know, the stuff that worked. But even at Second City, that was a big part of it, is, you know, you do the little improv set, and then people would take notes, people would videotape the improv set, and someone would be like, oh, you know, I really like this character, this scenario, you should try that again tomorrow in the improv set. And then next thing you know, it's okay, it was, yeah, definitely worked that time. I think you should do it again, and this time just try to get to the whatever point sooner and just play it out. And then finally it's like, okay, it seems like it's close. Who's going to write it up?
What is corporate script writing?
There's a friend of mine has a company that does, so it's everything from stuff that's closer to like a commercial, you know, or like some kind of like, you know, the culture of a company video, or training videos. And he just got real plugged in with a few places, and so we do a lot of that for like Macy's and JP Morgan Chase and a bunch of big old companies that do their best to tolerate me trying to make their things funny.
Let's talk about the comedy project.
Yeah, so I mean, there's not a ton to talk about with the comedy project right now. Basically, you know, going 15 years ago, maybe even, my friend Jeff Heilman and Damien Krentz and I talked about trying to open a comedy place in town, like not a comedy club, you know, really a comedy theater that would be, you know, improv and sketch centric. And for lots of reasons, that didn't happen. But then a few years ago, Ben Wilkie and I started talking about it again. And I do think that the city should have it. And I do think that, I mean, part of it, I think it's going to happen. I think, you know, at some point, something like Comedy Sports is going to come in. And I'd like to at least have something else in place before that, because otherwise that's going to be what people think improv is. And improv is also that. I'm not just bagging on it, on Comedy Sports, but because it can be a lot of other things, I would hope that maybe there could be something before they get here. Comedy Sports is a very like short form, gimmicky improv franchise. So we started looking at spaces. We did a Kickstarter that, you know, thankfully went really well. We got a lot of support from the comedy community in town, but also like the city of Grand Rapids, a lot of the business people in Grand Rapids. And so basically we're at the stage where we are looking at spaces. We actually put an offer in on a place that would have been, I think, the absolute best option, and we actually just yesterday found out that we did not get that space. So we are kind of in the process of regrouping and figuring out where else we think it can exist and succeed, because I'm not, you know, this could lead to, it could end up going in a lot of different directions, because the part of the problem is that I'm, you know, like, thankfully, like, I'm busy with a lot of other things. And so I don't want to do it if it's not going to, like, work. Like, I don't want to waste everyone's money who donated money, you know, who contributed to the Kickstarter. And I don't want to, you know, waste all of the people's time that it would take to kind of get it off the ground and then have it not work. And I, because there's a lot of places where I think it could work, but it would be like, you know, just barely working and just like barely paying rent and no one's getting paid. And, but it exists as a thing. And I just, I don't have the, I'm not in a place where I want that to be what my, you know, life is. So the location that we just found out we're not going to have was one of the locations where I really felt like it could really go like gangbusters here. Like this, it could actually thrive. So again, we're just kind of regrouping now and figuring out if there's another space where we feel that same way. And if not, what next?
What are some of your favorite restaurants in Grand Rapids and what do you like to order there?
Well, the Green Well is one of my favorites for sure. And, I mean, I love everything there. And if they have any specials, I just get that because then that's like my new favorite thing.
Do you like the other restaurants in the Essence restaurant group?
I am a fan of pretty much all of them.
Bistro Bella Vita and Grove.
Yep, I do like Bistro and Grove. I've only done the Grove, I think, twice, but I mean, it's incredibly good. It's, you know, it's a little bit more expensive, so that's not something I'm going to regularly. I am a barbecue fan, so.
Ooh, top five barbecue places in Grand Rapids.
Well, my number one, with some conditions, is Pit Stop Barbecue. It's Ooh. Out on 28th Street, almost to Cascade.
Their corned beef.
My
God.
Right. It's hard to take. Every time I get it, I can't believe that it's still that good.
I cry a little.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you get so much of it.
So that's what I was going to say. The reason why I give them the number one spot is because not only I think everything's good, all of their sides are good. All of their sauces are good. All of the meat is good. And some of the meat is great. So then you've got, you know, like...
Ever get their mustard sauce?
Yep. Have it at home right now. I have it at home right now. Because I went there yesterday. Yeah, because today's Friday.
Corned beef Thursday.
Yeah, I went there yesterday. Scott's is great. But I think that the meat, if you get the right thing, it's incredible. But it definitely costs a lot more. You definitely don't get very much. And I don't really like some of the sauces. I don't really like most of their sides, blah, blah. So, I mean, I hate to say that, but I do really like them. I just, bang for your buck, man, you can't beat Pit Stop. And Pit Stop is who they were going to be they're going to be part of the comedy project if it happens.
Ah.
So, you know, they're definitely going to be involved. I don't know. I have to pick more. I don't know who else I would pick.
Have you had Madeir's?
Where's that?
It is on Franklin and Eastern.
Franklin and Eastern?
That's Did you ever go to like, Sandman's?
Yeah, that's like 3 blocks from my house.
After Sandman's closed down, he started doing his own thing, and then he went to Madeir's.
Okay.
And it's very, very, very good.
Okay.
Sundays, they do an extended menu.
Okay.
Extra sides, extra meats.
All right.
Ribs are crazy good.
All right. I'll check
Sausages,
it out.
Sausages, crazy good.
Okay. And I like, and Slow's is good. You know, like I have no problem saying Slow's is good.
Their baby back ribs are insane.
Yep. They do stuff really well. Again, it's a little expensive.
Yeah. But, not a great value.
But it's real good. So there, we did four. I think that's pretty good.
Have you had Horseshoe?
It's gone.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure that's gone. That was the one kind of by Founders.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Oh.
Yep.
I never got a chance to try it.
Yep.
It's too bad.
Yep. So, yeah.
I don't know if there's even a fifth barbecue.
Well, there's like Texas. Daddy Pete's, and there's the Dallas Deli on Eastern. Yeah.
But, yeah. Any other restaurants of note?
I like Cinco de Mayo. I really like that. It's that Mexican restaurant on the mall right across from the Graham.
Pearl?
Like it. Huh?
On Pearl?
Or
is that on Monroe Center?
I think it's considered Monroe Center. I think so. But it's actually on both sides. It might be on both sides. No, it's not. No, it's not.
That's just on Monroe Center.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that El Granero place on Bridge Street is really good too.
Spanish Fort, the farm.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
There you go.
I love it.
Today I learned.
And Maru. I really like Maru. I really like Maggiano's before it closed.
Have you been to Ando?
No, that's the place over by New Holland, right?
Yep, from the same owners as Maru, but it's Japanese, Korean, Vietnamese.
All right.
Very, very good ramen. Definitely worth checking out.
Okay. And I liked One Bourbon. I've been there a couple times now and liked that.
Oh, I've never been there. What kind of food is that?
I don't know. New American or something, I think is what they would call it.
Sure.
You know, but yeah.
Anything you'd recommend eating there in particular?
The bourbon.
That's over on Bridge also, isn't it?
What'd you say?
That's also on Bridge?
Yeah, yeah.
That area is super hot.
It is crazy.
Booming.
Yep.
What is your favorite thing about performing comedy?
It's weird. I think my impulse was to... I almost just said making people mad. But I guess, and that is part of the answer, but I guess, you know, kind of like what I was saying earlier, it's like not just making them mad. Like, I want to be able to make them mad, but then like with enough context that they understand why they're mad and can either laugh at why they're mad or why it would make other people mad. And I guess... I do really like making people mad.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
What is your favorite thing about watching comedy?
Favorite thing about watching. I honestly, at this point, I like being able to see, like, I like being able to see some the craft. I like being able to see the effort, and you know, like, and it's not that I can't also enjoy it as like kind of as an audience member, but my filter is so clogged now. So I really enjoy seeing something so well done that I'm like, oh man. And almost immediately, the next feeling is, I gotta write something. It's like some people, it's like debilitating, and to me, it's only inspiring. Seeing good comedy, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And the final question of the interview portion of the show: if you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
You were right. I mean, only because, I mean, really, I think I was about 16, maybe 15 even, when I was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do.
Great. And I haven't had free time yet to set up a transition into the break.
Yeah.
So if you wouldn't mind, please doing some sort of musical performance or any performance that you're feeling, and then ring the bell to let me know that you're done, please.
Okay. So, this is a surprise musical request by Christopher. So, I guess I'll whistle. I know that's what everyone wants, so I'll just do it. I didn't talk about any of my whistling stuff, and so at least now you'll know about it.